Hi, Michaela Lafrac here. The podcast you are about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertlieb in for Michaela Lafrac. All this week, I've found my thoughts wandering back to the year 2011. It was late August, and while persistent rainfall descended on Chittenden County over a 48-hour period, nothing appeared to be too out of the ordinary, at least where I was. Then I got a call from the newsroom saying that everyone needed to come in because Brattleboro and much of the southern part of the state was essentially underwater. What followed was extensive coverage of a devastating tropical storm, but one that was described in its aftermath as a once-in-a-100-year weather event. That feels like wishful thinking now. This year, in less than a month's time, Vermont has been devastated by two major flood events, one arriving a year to the day after what were called historic floods that washed through the capital city and surrounding areas. Folks were just beginning to recover from the 2023 flooding when the waters came again in July of 2024. Vermonters can be forgiven if it all feels like a bit too much. So today, we're going to update you on what we know about the hardest hit areas in this latest round of flooding. This time, it's areas of the Northeast Kingdom that are taking the brunt of the damage. And we also want to take the opportunity for you to let us know how you're feeling, what you need, how you can help, and where we all go from here. Because while various areas of the state have been affected differently in degree by all this flooding, everyone together has a stake in getting us to recovery and preparing for the next storm, as we now know with near certainty that it won't be another century before it comes. And we're joined on the line now by Eric Forend, the Director of Vermont Emergency Management, and Pete Panakis, Science and Operations Officer at the National Weather Service in Burlington. Thank you both very much for taking the time today.
Thanks for having me on. A pleasure to be on.
Eric, let's start with you. What is the situation in the Northeast Kingdom right now?
As you know, on July 30th, a significant storm came through in the middle of the night. There was a significant amount of rescues and evacuations. There was no loss of life, which was fortunate, but there was a lot of destruction both to homes and infrastructure. So we are still tallying up the amount of infrastructure damage up there. Crews are getting to work, trying to get to some of those houses. There's still some houses that are inaccessible. We have some teams on side-by-sides and four-wheelers now actually trying to get up to those individuals to check on them again. They have been contacted and they are okay, but we're just checking in again to make sure and just trying to make sure that the resources are there that they need. And that's in Linden, but there's several other towns that are having similar issues with some of their smaller back roads and some of those more remote homes that we're trying to make sure are okay.
We were hearing about some especially hard-hit areas, including Lindenville, Red Village Road in particular. There were people stranded without water, power, food. Is that one of the areas that you're definitely looking at that people really need help right now?
Our teams are on Red Village Road today. There is a contractor up there actually starting to open the road. We believe there's four bridges out, so it's going to take a significant amount of time. But we have checked in with the residents. They're doing okay. We've made some water deliveries, but most of them have the ability to stay there. Even though they're without power, most have generators, and then typical Vermont fashion, they want to stay in their home. So we're just trying to support them in that decision. There is a farm up there that we're working with that doesn't have power and may need some feed deliveries. So we're working through that now.
Sure. Eric, do we know how many homes were actually destroyed by this latest round of flooding in the NEK?
The initial estimates might be upward of 20-25, but then there's trying to figure out what specifically is destroyed versus major damage. Those are all FEMA descriptions, so how we kind of package that up and present it to FEMA at this time. But we know there's a significant amount of houses that were destroyed with individuals out of them. Usually a harbinger of that is what the shelters are showing, but we currently do not have a shelter census, so all those individuals have gone to other locations, so we're just trying to get our those numbers a little bit more finalized.
Eric, for people that don't live in that part of the state but want to help, what is the best way for them to do so? Because I have to imagine that, you know, traveling to these affected areas, not a great idea. The crews, as you mentioned, they have to negotiate washed out roads, bridges are out. But for people that want to help, what can and should they do?
Yeah, we do not recommend traveling in that area at this point. We do have a couple volunteer groups doing some work, so individuals can reach out to volunteer groups through the VOAD, the Vermont Organizations Active During Disasters, VOAD. That's one way to do it. They can also volunteer through Serve Vermont. There's a website, vermont.gov/volunteer. We are taking names and trying to coordinate where they might make connections given their whatever their skill set is. And then there's always monetary donations, which are very helpful, and those are being handled through BGS, Buildings and General Services, and through the Community Fund.
I want to turn to Pete Benakis now. Pete, you know, mentioned earlier that there was historic flooding here, 8 inches of rain falling in one day in areas of the kingdom. And I kind of assume that meteorologists like yourself have, you know, kind of seen it all, maybe not too fazed by this sort of thing. But did that amount of rain in so short a period of time surprise you?
Yeah, well, it's highly unusual. The record for St. Johnsbury, and probably the second greatest total reported across the state of Vermont in recorded times. A lot of our records go back to the late 1800s. So, yeah, certainly to see that cluster of thunderstorms that formed in the middle of the night, just beneath an upper level low there in the Northeast Kingdom was... Yeah, very unusual and something we don't typically deal with here at the forecast office. So it was a lot.
And what was causing this exactly?
Well, what we saw last weekend was an upper-level low that formed off of Cape Cod, and it retrograded, which means it moved from east to west. You know, usually in the mid-latitudes, we see weather systems moving from west to east. This one actually retrograded back to the west and then progressed north across Vermont. We had some showers and thunderstorms during the daylight hours on Monday. They weren't particularly concerning. But then as the circulation center moved across the Northeast Kingdom, there was a blossoming of thunderstorms that occurred around midnight, lasted till 4 or 5 a.m. And just in that short period of time, as you mentioned there at the Fairbanks Museum in St. Johnsbury, 8.08 inches of rainfall for a new daily record. And I should note also on July the 10th, they had 4.93 inches there in St. Johnsbury. That's the fourth highest total on record, and these records date back to 1894. So definitely some statistical anomalies there.
And you're also, when you mentioned the earlier event in July, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that sounds to me like the ground is saturated with rain as well, which has also got to add to problems when you're dealing with flooding.
Well, that's exactly right. You know, the atmosphere is complicated enough, but when we're talking about flooding and hydrology, we have to take into account the soil moisture, the ground conditions, the slope of the terrain. Vermont's got a lot of mountainous and slope terrain, of course, so that makes us very susceptible, especially when there is high soil moisture. You know, that July 10th event was bad in its own right, but also acted as a primer for what we saw on the 30th, and the inability of the soil to really absorb any of that additional rainfall. The rain goes straight into runoff, and unfortunately, we get the problems that we saw, you know, early Tuesday morning.
I know you have the radar. I know you could see a lot of this coming, but it felt like a lot of people were caught off guard by this. Is there any way to predict a storm like this, or do we need to acknowledge that, especially with climate change, there are going to be massive rain events that we can't really warn people about with too much forewarning?
Yeah, first I would note the warnings were excellent. We did have generally 2 to 3 hours for the actual warnings themselves. We were able to activate the wireless emergency alerts so that people knew about the imminent dangers. Now, that said, we would have loved to have watches out the previous day so people would have some additional advance notice and be prepared. One thing we see from a social science perspective, Mitch, is that if people are hit with a warning without any prior notice that there could be bad weather, that they look for confirmation before taking action, like evacuating and so forth. So we really want to have those watches and that accurate forecast in advance. Unfortunately, with an event like this, it's very difficult to do that. It's actually reaching the limits of our current predictability. There's advances in science all the time, but a cluster of thunderstorms like this in the middle of the night underneath an upper low, it's really pushing the boundaries of what we can accurately forecast more than several hours in advance. So we do have to acknowledge some of those limits.
Pete, we got this question from a listener named Dave who wrote in, and I think you may have alluded to some of this already, but his question is, it revolves around how much Vermont's topography is playing a role with this flooding compared to other northeastern states. He says, it seems that Vermont has had an inordinate amount of heavy rain and flooding events in the past 10 years compared to surrounding states. Is this repeated flooding just bad luck, or does the topography have a lot to do with it?
Well, certainly in our state, the topography plays a major role in where we see flooding. When we plot the distribution of floods across the state, a lot of it is concentrated in the more mountainous areas. For example, here in the Champlain Valley, we've been pretty lucky. We haven't really seen the extent of flooding that they have, and especially central and eastern portions of the state the last couple of years. And there is an element of, you know, climate change plays a role as well, but there's also an element of recency bias. You know, we've had four events now since last July, but between Hurricane Irene and August of 2011 and 2023, we really didn't have much of anything for almost 12 years. So, you know, we do see overall an increasing trend. The annual trend in rainfall is up across the state, but that doesn't mean we're going to see the frequency that we've unfortunately seen just here recently in the last several weeks and even in the last year. It's been a little bit of a coincidence just how frequently it's been happening here very recently.
Well, you're kind of prompting my last question then, Pete, because, you know, we do have some weeks left in summer. It's not over yet. What are the chances this kind of thing could happen again in the coming weeks?
Well, unfortunately, as we alluded to with the soil moistures being highly saturated, it's not going to take a lot of rain in some of these locations that have already been hit hard to produce additional flooding. So we don't see anything specific right now, but we're going to have to remain very vigilant. Everyone's going to have to remain on their toes through the remainder of the summer, because any concentrations of thunderstorms, especially slow-moving thunderstorms, we're going to have to monitor very carefully. And, I would just have... You know, everyone should have emergency action plans in place, know their susceptibility to flooding based on, for example, how close they live to rivers and so forth, and just keep in tune with what we're saying here at the National Weather Service and what your local emergency officials are messaging as well.
Yeah, we appreciate your updates so very much. Thank you, Pete. I want to take a call now. We have Megan on the line, coordinator for a Northeast Kingdom volunteer group, I believe. Megan, hi, you're on Vermont Edition.
Hi there.
Hi. What are you doing to help coordinate volunteer efforts? Where are you right now, actually?
Right now I'm at my home in Sutton, just north of Lindenville, which on days like today is quite rare. I'm usually driving around checking on people. What am I doing? Gosh.
Big question.
I'm a mom of two with a full-time job who saw a gap in response. Specifically individual response to individual assistance. I noticed that the rescues were happening and the road crews were taking care of the roads, but I wasn't seeing our community being taken care of. I wasn't seeing our neighbors getting assistance. So I started collecting emails, and then I was reached out to by NECO, Northeast Kingdom Organizing, and CURV, which is a long-term disaster recovery group, and they said, you're just who we're looking for. We're looking for someone who's able to put together volunteers, train them to muck and gut, canvas communities that need to get put into this amazing program called Crisis Cleanup, which has been a lifesaver for our organization. And so I just kind of hit the ground running. And it started 3 weeks ago in Lindenville with a lot of the inundation flooding that we had. We did have some rain events up in the mountainous parts of our area. But now, 3 weeks later, we find ourselves here again with all new circumstances, much more catastrophic in many ways, especially in concerns with the roads, accessibility, getting to folks, as both of them mentioned before.
And Megan, what's the greatest need right now? Is it the basic things, food, water, clothing, medicine? What do people need?
So this is a bit of a difficult question to answer, because as someone who's leading the efforts to get volunteers involved, one of our biggest needs is just volunteers. We need feet on the ground. We need people's houses to be canvassed. We need them to be muck and gutted. And one thing I've really noticed is there's a huge disconnect between the state officials, the municipalities, and then community members who are looking to volunteer. So I know before Eric had mentioned the VOAB, the Serve Vermont, all of these volunteer opportunities or ways to sign up to volunteer. We have no access to that. So we are not able to make these wide calls out to the greater Vermont network to get people to come help us. And that's really difficult because as a mutual aid organization that is able to really assist the individual needs of our community, we don't have the resources. We're not included in the emergency plans of these municipalities to be a point of access of communication for people looking to volunteer. So people need food, people need water, but we need volunteers to get those things to these people because our emergency services are backed up. They've got to deal with major road disasters, people stranded. And so I think this might be a bit of a tangent, but there just needs to be a more concerted effort to get municipalities in touch with mutual aid organizations. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that this starts to change people's perspective on that.
Megan, I thank you so much for the call and for all the hard work that you're doing there, and stay safe. Eric Forend, if you're still with us on the line, what Megan is saying there, you can hear a little frustration, but obviously everyone is scrambling at this point. Is there something that can be done to better create that kind of communication effort that Megan's talking about so that folks like her can be directed to places where they're needed?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I can't speak specifically to her situation, but every town has an emergency management director by statute, and that individual is either appointed by the select board or volunteers. They're the direct conduit to the state emergency operations center. So if there's an issue and volunteers are needed in the town, they can reach out to the EMD, and the EMD can reach out to the emergency operations center, who then can connect Serve Vermont, who has a list of volunteers. We have a volunteer coordinator that can work with the VOADs. The VOADs are in the state. So we do have those connections. They just need to be funneled through the EMD, because what we want to ensure is that all the requests are being coordinated, and we don't want one side of town asking for one thing and the other side asking for another thing, but neither one knowing what either side is doing. So we want to make sure that it all gets funneled through the emergency management director to make sure that it's being adjudicated, make sure that it's being looked into, and make sure it's being tracked and followed and coordinated. So that's the process.
Is there a website, simple phone number that folks could call, Eric, that would, you know, facilitate that process?
Yeah, the EMD's numbers are listed on the VEM, Vermont Emergency Management website.
Okay, great. And we'll have a link to that as well.
Local town officials should have it as well.
Okay. And we'll have a link to that as well. Thank you so much, Eric. Well, let's take a call from Michael. Michael in Plainfield. Michael, hi, you're on Vermont Edition.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you, Michael. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Mitch. Thanks for taking my call. I'm the emergency management director for the town of Plainfield. And it's a nice segue coming in after Eric. And I haven't spoken with the press since Plainfield was hit in the 10th and 11th. And frankly, we're still digging out.
What do you need right now, Michael? What's the greatest need in Plainfield? Oh, we may have lost Michael. Okay, Michael, I'm going to ask you to call back if you can, and we are going to take a break. And joining us now is St. Johnsbury Fire Chief Bradley Reed. Chief Reed, thank you so much for taking the time today. I know you are probably exhausted, and we appreciate every moment you can give us for an update.
Hi, thanks for inviting me to come on.
What is the status of roads and other infrastructure, homes, et cetera, in St. Johnsbury right now?
We still have an extensive amount of damage that we're working on. Our primary focus right now in terms of roads is to make them passable by emergency vehicles. I just got done an assessment with the town manager of some of our worst areas, and we're making good progress. The Department of Public Works has been out there tirelessly each day. At this point in time, I think we're down to about nine major closures that we're working on, and our goal is to have most of those wrapped up by this afternoon. There are some roads that are completely destroyed and gone that are going to take a little bit longer, but for a period of time, there was actually fairly large sections of our community which were inaccessible by emergency vehicles, so we're just focusing on roads where we can
Are you still with us, Chief Reed? I think you fell out there a little bit. All right, we're going to work on getting Chief Bradley Reed back on the line. He was just updating us on the situation in St. Johnsbury. Chief Reed, are you still with us?
I think you dropped. Yeah, I'm still here.
Great, thank you. I wanted to ask, you know, when the worst of the rain fell earlier this week, we heard concerns about the water supply being potentially affected. But last we heard, the water plant was okay. Is that still the case?
It is, yep. On Monday night, early Tuesday morning, it was struck by lightning. And I'm not an expert on our water treatment facility, but as I understand it, the short version is it got struck by lightning and two of the three control panels got taken out. And so they didn't have replacements right there handy because it's a redundant system. Our water treatment facility operator had worked for a couple days straight to get that back up and functioning. It's not functioning the way it traditionally does, but we've got it working. It takes a little bit more finesse and a little bit more work from our water filtration plant, but we are producing water and at rates that are normal for our community. So
that's some good news. Yeah, we heard that people were being asked to conserve water sort of just in case. Is that still being asked of people to just be careful with what you do have?
I think for the time being, it's still going to be wise to conserve where you can, but people should use it as needed. It's not at a critical point. We're still producing water in quantities that we normally would. So, but that said, I think until this emergency has passed and we've got everything functioning the way it normally would, I would still urge people to just, if you don't need to use the water, don't.
On a personal level, how are you and your teams doing after all of this and everything you've been through over the past few weeks? I mean, I'm talking about, you know, morale and just the general feelings of your mental health and your physical feeling as well at this point.
Yeah. Well, physically, the crews are pretty tired. It was July 10th, I believe, was our first round. And so we were on the field quite a bit there, got recovered, and then they've basically been up since, you know, Tuesday night with minimal sleep. We've got them basically coming in during the day and going home in the evening, get some rest, coming back in first thing in the morning. Today we don't have everybody back. We've got a few extra folks back in just handling some of our smaller issues. But yeah, they're pretty tired. They're pretty beat up. But they, as always, did a great job.
What about help or that you're getting from other places? You know, I asked Eric Foran before if you know, people shouldn't be driving. Obviously, there are so many roads out in St. Johnsbury. But, you know, are you getting help, support that you need, even if it's just a kind word from folks who are weighing in with things in St. Jay?
Yeah, the response has been great. And even starting from the night of the incident, I, like probably a lot of other people in our community, woke up to a screeching phone and a warning. And I looked out my window and thought I probably ought to go out and start checking things. It was about 1:30 in the morning. And I got out and I did some assessments and I realized pretty quickly that we were in trouble. And I called the watch office, the Vermont Emergency Management Watch Officer. And Mike Cannon from the chief of the USAR team called me back pretty quickly and advised he was on his way to St. Jay in the middle of the night. And I think there was five teams initially activated, and I believe they ramped up at least another four. And they arrived probably a couple hours after they were first activated. And they were coming from all over the state, so that's a pretty good response time at night. Initially, we had our hands full. We called Littleton. They're just over the river in New Hampshire, and between Littleton and St. Johnsbury, we were handling what we could in town, and Lindenville was getting called out, dealing with their community. So we're a little bit hectic for a while. Once we get the Swiftwater teams in, it was a little easier to handle some of our activity, but it was a pretty great response from the state. And then even right through now, multiple communities have reached out, offering support, have been in the community helping out. The public has been great, and there's a lot of volunteer organizations looking to help out as well.
Okay.
So it's been a great response.
Thank you so much. St. Johnsbury Fire Chief Bradley Reed, thank you so much for the time. Stay safe.
You're welcome. Thanks.
I want to pass along this message that we heard from Michael earlier. We lost him on the line in Plainfield. He said Plainfield needs housing for 27 households. He urges people to call 802-227-2660. That's 802-227-2660. And please volunteer housing for these displaced households. Again, 27 households, and people need help there. And this one other note from St. Johnsbury, the annual Summer Dog Dog Mountain Party that was supposed to be scheduled for this Saturday has been canceled for obvious reasons, and hopefully they can get that back to that wonderful event next year. I had to give my dog the bad news that he wouldn't be going this Saturday to St. J. Dog Mountain. Now, this morning, Vermont Public's Peter Hirschfeld spoke with producer Nathaniel Wilson about what he was seeing on the ground in the Northeast Kingdom. Let's take a listen to that conversation.
Pete, you stayed in Lindenville last night. What's the scene there like this morning?
So I drove to one of the spots that people were especially concerned about on Red Village Road in Lindenville. The river does not appear to have risen to dangerous levels. I've talked to a number of folks in town who commuted here from places like Waterford, St. Johnsbury, Barton. And this is totally anecdotal at this point, but I'm not hearing firsthand reports from anybody who's had eyes on those communities so far this morning who says they saw anything concerning. So that's incredibly good news for a region that has had more than its fair share of hardship over the last 3 weeks.
And Pete, you've been traveling to different parts of Caledonia County over the past few days. How extensive is the damage there from the flooding that took place earlier this week?
More extensive than I first appreciated when I arrived in the kingdom on Wednesday morning. The damage isn't obvious if you're just driving through town. Like, you could come to Lindenville right now and fill up at a gas station or buy groceries at White Market and not be any the wiser about what's going on here. But if you go to places like Mount Hunger Road in Linden, it's difficult to describe how unbelievably severe the damage is. The small brook that runs along the road there has carved a canyon where Mount Hunger Road used to be, swallowed a house, at least two houses destroyed, some others damaged. Red Village Road, it's a well-paved, it's a paved and pretty well-populated town road off Route 5. There are more than a half dozen major washouts. Like, the road is gone in places, bridges are gone. And there are scores of residents right now who are entering their third day of being stranded in place with no power, no water. They can't leave in their vehicles to get gas, get food, get potable water. Most of the folks I've talked to up there are making do, they're figuring it out, helping their neighbors. But I've talked to some people who are really worried about this situation devolving if state or local government can't figure out a way to get people out.
And what has the recovery process looked like for those residents who've experienced flood damage?
Pretty makeshift. It's tough to physically reach the places that need the most help right now. So a lot of the work of checking in on folks, making sure they have what they need, has been by four-wheeler and foot. A lot of that work is being done by groups of volunteers that are deploying to discrete neighborhoods to do this. Towns are overwhelmed with damage to road infrastructure right now. So they're spending a lot of their time trying to get roads passable to one-way traffic so people can get in and out. But frustration is building here among folks who say they cannot get solid answers or any answers at all in some cases as to when the power is going to be back on, when they're going to be able to leave their homes, and when they're going to be able to get back to some semblance of normalcy.
And Pete, where are you headed today?
Well, I am headed right now to East Burke to meet up with a crew of volunteers that's going to hike into Kirby, because there are a lot of people who are on an island there right now. They're planning to check in on folks that have been stranded since Tuesday, some of whom might not have seen anyone from the outside world since then. And I think that gives you a small glimpse into what things look like up here. It's local residents meeting at an elementary school to hike over devastated roads to check in on stranded neighbors. That's kind of where people are at right now.
That was Vermont Public reporter Peter Hirschfeld speaking with producer Nathaniel Wilson. Let's take another call now from the Northeast Kingdom. Jean Marie is on the line. Hi, thanks for calling in.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure. What are you seeing and what do you need in your part of the kingdom there?
Yeah, well, I'm calling in on behalf of a group of organizations who actually had a press conference this morning talking about kind of like the bigger arc of needs that we have around policy in the state. I work with Northeast Kingdom Organizing, which has been doing on the ground work to set up the flood recovery, the long-term flood recovery group up there since last year. So we were in the middle of rebuilding homes, and then the same people got hit again, as people know. And so we kind of met up with a bunch of other groups around the state who are also seeing this and created a list of policy changes that we need in between these events, like anti-displacement policies, so that we're sure that people are protected to stay at their in their homes, and more municipal support, like accessible, easy municipal support for volunteer town officials who need to be able to respond more quickly, but maybe aren't supported and can't access the state level support that they need when they can, because they're volunteers working at each town. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. And what do you want to do with this policy list next, Jean Marie? Where would you like to see this go with this policy list?
Yeah. I mean, right now we're trying to just kind of get together and see all these people on the ground, what we're seeing in common as the whole around administration, anti-displacement policies, and housing, and that the crisis between these climate disasters that are happening and the housing crisis is affecting the most marginalized of Vermonters, and how do we keep lifting up their needs throughout the quiet times, and so in moments of disaster like this, we actually have a coordinated response.
Right. Yeah, I appreciate that, because this is something that everyone is going to have to look at moving forward, because as we said at the beginning of this program today, this is not something that's going to be a once in one every 100-year event. Thank you for the call, Jean Marie from the Kingdom. I appreciate that. Hope you stay safe. Vermont Public Education reporter Lola Dufour covered the governor's press conference yesterday, which we aired live here on Vermont Public. There was a lot of news about the urgent flooding in the Kingdom, but a lot of broader issues were raised as well. And Lola Dufour joins us now from Montpelier. Lola, hello. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks, Mitch, for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. What was the mood at the governor's press conference like yesterday?
You know, the governor expressed somewhat contradictory feelings. You know, he really tried to rally the troops. He called on Vermonters to come to each other's aid. He said, we can't give up. You know, we can't let defeat set in. But at the same time, he also acknowledged that with these successive storms, it really feels like Vermont is taking one step forward in its recovery and then three steps back when, you know, the next historic rain falls, sometimes just 3 weeks later. And he talked a little bit about something that we've heard several callers mention, which is housing. We lose houses every time there's a flood like this. And, of course, there's a pre-existing housing crisis in Vermont.
What are the administration officials worried about, though, Lola, in the short term?
In the very short term, they're really worried about debris. There's a lot of flood debris still in waterways from the last storm around culverts and bridges. And they're very worried about getting those out sooner rather than later, because if another major rain event happens soon, which it could, it almost happened yesterday, those could create plugs and exacerbate flooding. So administration officials really emphasize that they need homeowners and towns to prioritize getting those out of the way as quickly as possible.
Yeah, debris removal is a huge thing right now. One of the things I found really striking, Lola, in the press conference was the governor was talking about this latest flooding to hit the Northeast Kingdom, and he said there's really no guarantee that this latest round will qualify for federal disaster relief. He didn't rule it out, but he was talking about still waiting on federal disaster relief from those earlier July floods just a few weeks ago. What could all this mean for municipal finances?
Yeah, it could be bad. We should note that we're expecting to hear back about, you know, federal disaster aid from the storm from a few weeks ago very soon. And officials are pretty confident that we'll get, you know, that we'll unlock some kind of federal aid. Unclear yet which counties will qualify, and also the reimbursement rate, which is important. But, you know, that really highlights that Vermont is really at FEMA's mercy. And even when we do get federal aid, FEMA does not reimburse everything. And so there's a growing concern about what these storms, these back-to-back storms, could mean for town and city budgets. In some cases, small towns are already seeing damages that total, you know, two, three, four, or five times their municipal budget. So officials are once again asking Vermonters to report their damage to 211, because the more damage that's reported, the more likely we are to meet thresholds that trigger federal cash. But Scott also acknowledged that there's going to be unmet need, and he really urged Congress to act to make FEMA, you know, FEMA more generous and more flexible. Vermont's congressional delegation also just implored their colleagues for additional flood aid. But of course, given the current political climate in Washington, that could be a tall order.
Yeah, it could be a tall order. But as you know, we heard before that report that Peter Hirschfeld did, you know, he talked about it. I'm not the one we just heard, but his reporting earlier about some of FEMA's failures to get this aid to people. People are asking what FEMA is really for at this point. So yes, the current political climate in Washington makes all this difficult. But it would occur to me, Lola, that these kinds of storms, yes, they're affecting Vermont, but there are wildfires out west. There are other things that FEMA is also tasked with doing. This is really affects everybody at some point, given climate change. And do you think that's a message that Scott will be bringing to Congress, that we really are all this together beyond Vermont?
I think he will. I think certainly Vermont's congressional delegation has made that case before, and will be making it again. And I think, yes, in certain respects, it is both a blessing and a curse that so many places across the United States are experiencing these devastating disasters. It means that, you know, it's not a red state issue or a blue state issue, and so you're a little bit more likely to get buy-in from Congress to act. But again, that kind of action is really no guarantee given present dysfunction. So, you know, we'll have to see. But for now, we kind of can't assume that the feds are coming to the rescue.
We did also hear at the press conference yesterday, Governor Scott saying he didn't shy away from the fact that this is really tough, you know, that it can feel very demoralizing. But we also heard from the Public Safety Commissioner, Jennifer Morrison, who was really taking pains to thank everyone for their volunteer efforts so far and what she has seen, a tremendous response, the swift water rescues that have happened, that were all volunteer-led. So, you know, in taking a look at what you've seen, Lola, reporting so far, are Vermonters pulling together despite how difficult this is for everybody right now?
I think they are. I think we've seen real acts of heroism and selflessness. That being said, you know, if you're able to go help out your neighbors muck out this weekend or this week because more volunteer aid is needed, and will continue to be needed in the future. And that's a message that the governor sent out this week. And so I think as much as we should celebrate, the way that Vermonters, come together in these sorts of moments, we should also be cognizant that it's, we could use even more people to step up. And also, you know, relying on volunteer labor is also kind of evidence of a larger social safety net that is not there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It is also a little bit of an indictment that we are so reliant on neighbors coming together. And so, you know, I have complicated feelings about that.
Yeah, you're tapping into something really important there, I think, Lola, and I appreciate you saying it, because it is tremendous when Vermonters step up and help each other, and it's wonderful, but there is sometimes only so much that regular folks can do. As we heard from the woman before from the Kingdom, she's got two kids to deal with, she's got a life to deal, and she's still getting out there and doing it all. But certainly, we're going to need, I think, moving forward, and Senator Peter Welch has mentioned this as well, well. Something has got to change from those federal officials who are tasked with helping folks like this out in these situations. Vermont Public Education reporter Lola DeFore, thank you so much for the time today. Really appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.